You and Crime. Tonight, on the fourth of this week's series of informal conversations, Quincy Howe chats about criminal prosecution. His guest is Manuel Robbins, former head of the Indictment Bureau of the New York District Attorney's Office. Now here's Quincy Howe.
Mr. Robbins never knew me before today, but I've known him for some time. I've served on a number of grand juries here in New York and have seen him present evidence on people the district attorney's office had arrested. What impressed me especially was that he never showed any zeal to indict just for the sake of indicting. It is really the opposite. If he didn't have too much evidence against a man, he'd just say so, frankly. If he had a lot, he'd let the facts speak for themselves. Now, I know that all the other grand jurors were much impressed with this approach of his, and I've always wanted to know, is that typical, Mr. Robbins, of modern grand jury district attorney procedure?
I would say that was typical.
That's the way they all do, not only in New York.
That's the way they all should be trained to do, and that's the way everybody in the district attorney's office in New York, as far as I remember, did.
Well, don't we have quite an advantage here in New York of having this bipartisan system where the district attorney is not either a Democrat or a Republican or runs as such, but he's endorsed by both parties?
Yes. In New York, we are extremely fortunate in having a district attorney who has three times been elected on the nomination of all the major parties. And, of course, that keeps politics out of the district attorney's office, and that's where it should be kept out of the district attorney's office.
Do you think there's any possibility of putting a district attorney on a really civil servant basis and not having him elected at all, but have him as a permanent official, or would it always have to be elected, do you feel?
I don't know whether it always would have to be elected. I can't gauge that, but I think it would be a wonderful idea, and I think it should be a permanent position in the civil service.
Because in the past, there has been the feeling that some district attorneys just want to run up a big line of convictions, especially along election time.
Well, I haven't had any experience with that. The reason I think it would be good to put it in a civil service category would be that it is in the main an administrative job, and it requires administrative supervision. Now, the trouble with, on the other hand, with having it as a civil service job is that it very often calls for new blood. And it's very hard sometimes to get new blood with a civil service status. There should be some middle position that can be worked out so that perhaps the top job in the district attorney's office should be elected, but perhaps the rest of the staff ought to be on tenure, that is, at civil service tenure.
Yes, yes. Well, now, Mr. Robbins, would you say we hear a lot of talk in the papers these days about a crime wave having followed the war? Would your experience here in New York City lead you to believe that there has been a great outburst of crime in the last 3-4 years?
I would say there has not been an outburst of crime. In fact, the figures, as far as New York County concerned, indicate that there has been no marked rise in the crime rate and no marked tendency towards any particular type of crime. We have no increase of any type of crime or any increase in the overall volume.
And no decrease, on the other hand. It isn't falling off any, or after all, population is increasing. How about that factor?
There's no marked tendency between the figures that we have at present and the figures before the war. There's no marked distinction.
I see. Because the man in charge of federal prisons, Mr. Bennett, who was on this series earlier, spoke of there being some decline in the crime rate throughout the country. That was on a national basis.
Well, in New York, there is a slight decline, but it hasn't come to any proportion where you could say that was a marked decline. Slight decline.
So that you'd say that this emphasis, or the alleged emphasis on crime in the newspapers and all that, is not really reflecting a true picture, that they sensationalize, but actually there's no more than there was 10 years ago.
That's right.
Yeah. How about, I mentioned the press, how about your own experience with the press? People speak of the sensationalizing of the press and all that. How do you feel as a former district attorney man of district attorney's office, how do you feel about the press?
Well, working with the press is part of the job of every district attorney or every assistant district attorney who has to meet the reporters and confer with them. That's all part of the day's work. In many instances, the reporters covering the district attorney's office have immeasurably cooperated. The district attorney's prosecutions by keeping silent when secrecy or forbearance was essential. In other cases, they've been resourceful in helping the solution in certain cases. But a working relationship with the press is essential, and you have to build up the confidence of the press that the cases are being prosecuted thoroughly and investigated carefully.
And you find that the press, dealing with newspaper men, newsmen, is no different from dealing with any other human being. He has his own profession, and he follows certain procedures.
The profession of the press and the profession of the bar have no conflict that can't be worked out.
It's just a matter of recognizing that he has one function, and you have to recognize what it is and make the necessary allowances.
I agree.
Well, now, how about you mentioned a while ago the administrative side of your work. It seems here, especially in New York, this district attorney's office is almost like a huge big business or any big organization, isn't it?
Well, that's exactly what it is. In New York, the district attorney's office comprises about 73 or 74 attorneys. It's run on a large-scale business pattern. The cases are channeled through various bureaus, which start from the arrest of the defendant to his ultimate appeal to the highest court. And they're processed in a sort of vertical setup through these various channels. In that way, we are able to get specialists in each bureau to examine the case and to give it the proper attention. And we are able to handle a huge volume that way very expeditiously, which we would be unable to do if we had this big volume and had to assign particular assistance to cases from start to finish.
Well, now, Mr. Robbins, beginning at the beginning with the arrest, now that's all in the hands of the police, of course.
That's right.
The police come to you with, I remember it happened again and again down in the court. You would come in, or one of the people from your office would come in and question somebody in connection with an arrest. The police had arrested this man or this woman, and then you presented whatever facts you could find.
In the great majority of cases, the arrests emanate from the police wholly. In some cases, the district attorney has made his independent investigation and has ordered the arrest of certain defendants. In any event, the actual physical factor of arrest is affected by the police.
Now, when Governor Dewey was district attorney and was prosecuting these various rackets and so on, would conduct an investigation, in that case, would he assign or have the power to assign certain police to a certain job of investigation?
The district attorney Dewey at that time and district attorney Hogan now have a special squad of police assigned, known as the grand jury squad, and that is assigned to the district attorney's office, and they are undertaking and carrying out the detective work that the district attorney requires for his investigations.
Yes, well, now we get these prisoners brought into court, arrested by the police. Then what happens there? You say there are various different specialists go to work on them. For instance, a psychiatrist, you have one attached,
well,
I suppose, to your office?
In cases where a psychiatrist is needed, we have a psychiatrist who's not only a psychiatrist, but a general medical practitioner as well, on the payroll of the district attorney's office, Dr. Lichtenstein. He's been there for a great number of years, and he is our medical expert. And where we need an examination, either on some physical ground or on some psychiatric ground, he conducts that examination. He also is available to testify in court on insanity cases as to whether or not the defendant is or is not insane under New York law.
And can you tell me, Mr. Robbins, if the same practice is used in other counties and other parts of the country of having some doctor or someone like that to advising and sitting in?
Most counties do not have a doctor on the payroll. They retain doctors when, as, and if needed. But the volume is so great in New York and the need so recurrent that we have to have one available at all times.
And then what other sort of specialists do you have in the DA's office, Mr. Robbins? What other kinds besides this highly specialized psychiatrist?
Well, we have no other. We have a youth counsel bureau.
Well, perhaps I should put it this way. You have, I suppose, certain lawyers, certain attorneys there who specialize in one kind of case.
Right.
I remember a Mrs. Walsh who handled a lot of children very well.
That's right.
And that's the way it goes.
The various bureaus, I think, is what you're
that's it, I think,
driving
yes.
at. There's one bureau which concerns itself with presenting cases to the grand jury, another bureau which concerns itself with trying the cases in court, or accepting the pleas of guilty when they're offered, another bureau which undertakes the appeals which are brought to the defendant after they've been convicted. There are various other bureaus which deal with clemency applications to the governor and writs of habeas corpus for release from prison and resentencing of defendants and applications for resentence and the various things that would come up in a trial of a criminal case.
Well, this doesn't sound like some of the detective fiction I've read or some of the crime movies I've been to. Do you think those are a bit wide of the mark?
Well, they may not be wide of the mark in the less populated sections. In those sections, naturally, there is not such a great volume, and the district attorney there doesn't need that bigger staff or that amount of specialization, and certainly his county can't afford it. But we have that big volume, and in New York, the district attorney does very little personal sleuthing. He doesn't go looking for footprints and fingerprints and powder marks, things of that sort. He leaves that to the specialists on the police department.
And then now, how about the judge? How does he fit into this picture? There's no connection at all between the DA's office and the bench. Is that completely separate?
The only connection there ever should be would be one of friendliness and cooperation. But actually, the judge is wholly independent. He's elected to be an impartial arbiter between both the defense and the prosecution. And the judge's function is merely to see that the trial is presented according to law, and that the jury is instructed as to what the law is so that they may be correctly determine whether the defendant did the things he's charged with doing under the law of New York.
And how about on the matter of sentencing? Does the DA have much take much interest in that? Is that a strong part of his work?
Well, I can only speak for the district attorney of New York County's office. There they take little or no part in the sentencing, leaving that to the court and to the probation department of the court. In other district attorney's offices, they may recommend sentence.
Well, now, what would you say, Mr. Robbins, are some of the chief obstacles in the way of a district attorney from doing a more effective job than he is now doing?
Well, I would say that the chief obstacle for the effective prosecution of crime is the reluctance on some members of the public to come forth with information or to testify in a criminal case. I remember in the many years of the Rackets prosecutions under Governor Dewey and the present District Attorney Frank Hogan, where we worked unceasingly to get people to tell the facts that they knew. They didn't want to be mixed up in a criminal case. And naturally, under our system of law, you can only convict people on the testimony of witnesses. And if people who know facts and have dealt or have been forced to deal with criminals and refuse to testify about them, we cannot get any testimony which would convict the defendant.
Well, now, then what besides coming forward and giving evidence when such occasion arises, what besides that can the general public do to help the better administration of law through the DA's office?
The better administration of law would be immensely aided by seeing the public coming forth also as jurors. There is also some tendency to be too busy to be a juror. I know that today the New York County Grand Jury Association has a widespread campaign for improving and expanding the jury service. And jurors should realize that it's part of one of the pillars of our democracy, that the determination of guilt is in the hands of our fellow men, and they should volunteer and serve as jurors.
Thank you very much, Mr. Robbins, and I'll be down as a grand juror early next year, I hope.
Thank you, Mr. Howe.
You've been listening to You and Crime, Columbia's subject of the week in its regular series devoted to topics of popular interest. Joining Quincy Howe today was Manuel Robbins, former head of the Indictment Bureau of the New York District Attorney's Office. Listen in again when Mr. Howe will talk with the noted psychiatrist, Dr. Winfred Oberhelser, about the criminal psychology. Let's admit it. This is CBS, where you thrill to suspense on Thursday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.